WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The Spotsylvania County Board of Education approves hiring a controversial candidate to be superintendent. The vote to hire Mark Taylor, a man who has no experience in education, came after a contentious meeting where school board members argued and talked over each other. Councilmember Nicole Cole read from a letter that she says was sent to her by Taylor's kid.
Mark Taylor is beyond underqualified for this position. I believe he would be detrimental to the well-being of future students.
And that's not the only concern many residents and school board members have. He's said to be a friend of board chair Kirk Twigg. He's also posted what many say are racist comments on Facebook. Cole says she's having her attorney file a lawsuit in circuit court to stop the nomination. The Justice Department asking an appeals court to lift a federal judge's order stopping the feds from investigating classified documents seized from former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home.
The request comes one day after a federal judge picked an independent arbiter to review the material taken during an FBI search of former President Trump's Florida home. That judge also turned down the DOJ's request to resume using the seized records.
Fox's Matt Finn. A game between two Montgomery County High School football teams is cut short after players started fighting last night. Police were called to Gaithersburg High School around 8:30 as that school's team played Northwest High School's. One person with a knife was arrested, according to police. The ribbon will be cut this morning on Prince William County's new Animal Services Center 5 years after it was approved. Police spokesperson Renee Carr.
This one is significantly bigger than the old one. The old one was about 45 years old and had a bunch of issues that were going to be needing a lot of attention. So we've expanded it dramatically.
She says that expansion will allow more services to be offered. This morning's ribbon-cutting ceremony is at 11. Special Olympics in Virginia, again hosting the Dulles Plain Pole today after a two-year COVID hiatus.
On September 17th, we are very excited to be back hosting our annual Dulles Day Festival and Plain Pole event.
Ellen Head with Special Olympics Virginia.
So it is, like we like to say, 82 tons of fun.
Teams of 24 people play tug of war with the plane, she says, all to raise money for Special Olympics Virginia.
The event is open to anybody. It's free to attend, but we really hope you find something fun to do and give a donation to us while you're there, because it is a fundraiser.
Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
And that fundraiser starts at 11. WMAL Sports, a man who gave his all to help the Nationals win the World Series 3 years ago, may now have nothing left to give.
The Most Valuable Player Award goes to Steven Strasburg of the Washington Nationals.
That moment 3 years ago was the last good baseball thing to happen to Strasburg. Arm troubles have limited him to a handful of innings since then. Multiple surgeries have failed to work, and he's not picked up a ball in the past 3 months as he tries to rehab. Now in an interview with the Washington Post, Strasburg says he doesn't know if he'll ever pitch again, saying, quote, "I realize the clock is ticking."
WMAL's John Matthews. The Nats beat the Marlins. Traffic and weather next. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges, looked at the cameras, no crashes, and no reports of any construction being set up yet. In Virginia on the Beltway, it's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 66 in Fairfax County, no delays in either direction, eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. And in Montgomery County and Prince George's County on the Beltway, lanes are at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The hazy sunshine continues on this Saturday. Temperatures low to mid-80s. Still very comfortable with low humidity. Now later on tonight, lows back into the 60s. For Sunday, highs in the upper 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 61 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, Hour 2. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, Rick.
Well, the only thing we've heard out of the White House that's been covered by the mainstream media for the past year and almost 9 months now is that the border is secure, according to Alejandro Mayorkas and the Vice President Kamala Harris. However, this week it was a changing game as the governors of Florida and Texas sent migrants to the Naval Observatory, the home of Kamala Harris, and also to Martha's Vineyard. That got national attention. And finally, at this point, John, how do you see this playing out? Because the administration's been telling the American people for the last year and a half that there's no problem at the border, and the mainstream media hasn't covered it. So what happens now?
Well, it seems as though they are eyeball to eyeball. In Martha's Vineyard, for example, the immigrants who were transported there were shipped to a nearby military base. Barack and Michelle Obama did not open their $12 million home to the visitors, it seems. At the same time, New York Mayor Eric Adams has said that they will continue to welcome those who are being transported. I might add that there is one little figure here that is never really brought up. Texas spent $13 million to drive about 8,000 immigrants to Washington, D.C. within the last few weeks. But the figure is small of those being transported when one looks at approximately 5,000 migrants per day cross the border into the United States, and just about half of them are allowed to stay in the country and pursue their claims of political asylum. So it's the old saying, it depends on whose ox is being gored. Governors DeSantis of Florida and Abbott of Texas have shown that they are not backing down, and this comes after Karine Jean-Pierre, White House spokeswoman, said the Republican governors are guilty of, quote, a cruel, inhumane way to treat people who are fleeing communism. More next week.
Report says of the end of the week that the United States will be sending yet another $600 million plus in military aid to Ukraine. John, the politics of it on the international front.
Well, on the international front, it is, unfortunately, leading to more countries getting involved on both sides of the Russo-Ukraine war, something that began back in February. Right now, Ukrainians had a major victory in the northeast part of their country, and President Zelensky visited the city of Izium, which is one of the key cities recaptured from the Russians. I might add that the general in charge of the successful strike by Ukraine said that the Russians ran like Olympic sprinters. They did not bother to fight, and they just ran the other way. That's fine. But it does not mean an end to the war by any means. Just 2 days ago, in the city of Kryvyi, one that Moscow has long targeted, cruise missiles were sent in during a two-day strike on the civilian infrastructure. It disabled the major power station in Kharkiv, and that's the second-largest city in Ukraine, and it knocked out electricity in much of the eastern part of the rabid nations. Politically, it means there's more pressure on the United States to provide more arms. Germany already is having a major debate on whether to provide long-range missiles. Others fear that Zelensky and company would use them for major strikes beyond the border into Russia. We don't know that for a fact. And meanwhile, North Korea has agreed to send tanks to Russia. The problem with that is they may be old and obsolete. We'll see what happens.
Let's turn to New Hampshire primary results this week. Another Democratic-funded Republican wins a primary.
The Democratic onslaught, the undercover assault, was an attack on the frontrunner, Speaker Chuck Morse, saying he really wasn't a conservative Republican, and he backed spending increases supported by the centrist Governor Sununu of the Granite State. This certainly helped Brigadier General Bolduc win a squeaker that wasn't decided until the following day. He is a strong Trump supporter who, until the day he became the nominee, questioned the legitimacy of Joe Biden's election. Now, can he defeat Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan? I spoke to former Congressman Charles Bass, who was not a backer of General Bolduc, but believes that given the inflation that has racked the state of New Hampshire and the fact that Maggie Hassan won the closest race for the Senate in the nation 6 years ago by just about 1,000 votes, Bolduc has a chance. This is a race that's worth watching, and the national media will surely do so.
You've been following the developments in the case involving Mar-a-Lago, the documents, and the former president. Your take on the appointment of the special master.
Well, first of all, Judge Raymond Deary, retired, gets high marks from both sides. The Trump camp approved him as a special master, as did the Department of Justice, although there is legal action coming from DOJ to try to stop the process of deciding which of the 33 boxes were illegally in the Mar-a-Lago home of the 45th president. I might add that this is an arrangement, the special master law, that is akin to mediation in this case. Did the president violate the Espionage Act, as the Department of Justice is not so subtly hinting, or is this something that presidents do and eventually end up returning some documents to Washington, D.C.? 33 boxes is a lot, and Judge Deary, who also served on the FISA courts, has his work cut out for him. But at age 78, he's considered spry and able, and both sides say, go right ahead, Your Honor. Have at it.
I pay pretty close attention to the news during the week, obviously reading stories online, looking over the summaries and everything. And I lost count of the number of stories that talked about how former President Trump was not invited to the royal funeral, was snubbed, other terms were used. And I wanted to check with you, are former President Clinton or Obama going to London for the funeral?
No, only the sitting president is, and he'll be there a day, come back and head to the United Nations in New York. Frankly, the five living former presidents were all treated equally by the British Embassy. They're invited to an event a few days after the Queen's formal burial. Here in Washington, D.C., it will be at the National Cathedral, and in fact, all Americans are invited to it to bid farewell to the lady that many said she was our queen too.
In watching the coverage of the various ceremonies, the processions, quite a colorful array of uniforms on display. And what happened with Prince Harry and his uniform?
Turns out that because Prince Harry was relieved of all royal duties by his father and grandmother and lives in the United States, he was not entitled to wear the uniform. This is a bit unfair because he spent several years in the Royal Army and, in fact, served in Afghanistan under an assumed name, I presume to avoid kidnap possibilities by the Taliban. But in any event, his father did reverse the previous decision and make an exception for him to wear his uniform. Ditto for the king's younger brother, disgraced Prince Andrew. His association with Jeffrey Epstein, the notorious sex criminal, was something that clearly upset the royal family. And although a decorated pilot, he was denied all privileges and rights that come with being a royal. That's where he wore a business suit in the processions we watched. But just yesterday, on Friday, his brother, the king, did reverse himself, and Prince Andrew will be allowed to wear the uniform at the formal funeral of their mother. It certainly helps if you got a brother in high places.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Next week will be quite a week between saying goodbye to the Queen and hello to the President of Iran arriving for the United Nations meeting. I'll be watching.
7:19, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up next, we'll talk with Cheryl Atkinson. Very interesting take on Ukraine and NATO. And we'll also have Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up and KT McFarland also on the way. Right now, Albie D is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
It's good morning on the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland. No delays on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Maryland on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. In Prince George's County, traveling between the two Beltways, on the VW Parkway and 95, no delays north and south. In Virginia on 66, no delays east and west. In 95 in Virginia, it's clear between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The hazy sunshine continues on this Saturday. Temperatures, they'll gradually reach the low to mid-80s across the region. Still very comfortable with low humidity. Now, later on tonight, lows back into the 60s. For your Sunday, we'll add a touch of heat. Highs in the upper 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
61 degrees, 7:20 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thanks for joining us this morning. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She is the host of Full Measure, now in its eighth season on ABC 7 tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you do a lot of travel, and you were recently in Europe, of course, with the war in Ukraine. It's created a lot of concern around the other countries in Europe, and you were actually inside the NATO Air Command headquarters?
Yes, we're the first U.S. crew that was allowed inside. This is at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. It's NATO Allied Air Command, and this was the operations center set up specifically to coordinate the air operations in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And we learned a lot of really interesting stuff. First of all, I try to explain, as I often do, some of the basics about NATO and the background and why Putin was so worried that Ukraine might join NATO, because I don't think that's been really well explained. And, you know, people don't have time to research all that on their own. And then I thought one of the most interesting things was talking to some of the NATO bigwigs about Russia and what they see as the current Russian threat. One of the things I asked was, what is the Russian threat today? And they told me unequivocally, Russia currently is no threat to the rest of the world. And I was surprised to hear them say that. And you might ask how they know, and it's because they say there's a 30 to 60 day period where they can see movement and motion that would be getting ready in Russia for anything they think that would be going outside of Ukraine. And they'll have a heads up if that ever happens, you know, pretty strong lead time. And then they also said that Putin is being very careful right now to avoid going anywhere near any NATO territory. So he's staying, according to NATO, very closely within the confines of Ukraine so far.
So a lot of what we've heard from Vladimir Putin is simply bluster.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't mean it can't change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But the good news to me was that we would get, according to NATO, a heads up, and we would know that they are preparing and we would have time to prepare.
Putin has expressed so much concern about Ukraine joining NATO and about NATO in general. Did you get any sense of the feelings from the people at NATO?
Well, yeah, you know, from his perspective, it's been likened to what if the Russians, as they threatened to do at one point when it was the Soviet Union, what if they were going to put missiles, you know, 90 miles off the coast of the U.S. and Cuba? We wouldn't like that. We certainly didn't like that plan. It caused the Cuban Missile Crisis. And Putin sees that sort of as the same type of thing, the possibility that Ukraine, which makes up a huge part of Russia's western border, would join NATO, the Western Military Alliance that really is, for all intents and purposes, sort of an enemy to Russia. And we'll look Sunday on the map where you can see how much of Russia's western border is Ukraine. And I might go back historically to say that when it was the Soviet Union, there was the Warsaw Pact, which was sort of their equivalent of NATO. And so there was balance. But since the Soviet Union fell and the Warsaw Pact dissolved, Putin's really been outgunned, and it puts him in a more vulnerable feeling position, I'm sure, to know that we have this 30-member military alliance that, by the way, is about to expand with Sweden and Finland joining. And certainly Putin sees that as a threat that is not easy for him to counter.
The emphasis of the Biden administration has been on green energy, from solar energy to, of course, electric vehicles. And one of the questions on electric vehicles is the capability to charge electric vehicles. And we've seen recently in California, with the power crisis there, they actually asked people not to charge their electric vehicles. But what's the bigger picture in all of this?
Well, it's just fascinating. One of the great ironies happening in our society today is that the United States has all the energy in the world right here. And yet we're going into winter now with what is almost an unprecedented, at least in our time, threat of blackouts and power shortages and energy prices that are too high, you know, when we have all the energy here. So Scott Thuman is going to dig into how that can be the case, that we're suffering like this in a country that is so prosperous when it comes to energy. And he'll tell us what all of this has to do with the push to, you know, move toward green energy. All of this is interrelated, and he'll explain a lot of that for us.
We're hearing a lot about CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, where countries around the world would adopt a digital currency that is the equivalent basically of a paper currency, but it is, of course, digital. China is considering it, and what is the issue with China?
Well, this is kind of complicated, but it's so important. I found an expert who will explain this, I think, better than I can on Full Measure Sunday, but it has to do with the notion of China having a government-backed digital currency and doing so ahead of us, which, according to this expert, and he'll explain, could undermine the value of the dollar around the world and ultimately impact our national security in ways that I surely haven't thought much about. But it's got the United States considering whether we should move quickly to back a digital currency of our own. So, again, it sounds a little arcane, but this expert's going to explain a lot better than I can.
Fascinating. Cheryl Atkinson, Full Measure, tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is 7:26. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. 7:30 news coming up. Then we are back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. After hours of arguments, the Spotsylvania County Board School Board votes 4-3 to hire a controversial candidate as superintendent. The contract would pay Mark Taylor, the current Greene County manager, $245,000 a year. Many staunchly oppose hiring Taylor, who has never worked in education. Dr. Loretta Daniels says there were discrepancies in the contract that she doesn't agree with.
For one, I personally didn't feel that the superintendent met, or the potential superintendent met, our job description.
There have also been accusations that Board Chair Kirk Twigg is giving the job to a friend. Member Nicole Cole says she's having her attorney file a lawsuit to stop Taylor from being hired. The late Queen Elizabeth II's 8 grandchildren will stand vigil beside her coffin today at Parliament's Westminster Hall. It comes after some people waited 16 hours or more on London's coldest night in months to see the Queen's coffin.
Having to stand in line in the queue for likely 14 hours, really not that much, in comparison to what she did.
Over the next few days, about 750,000 more people are expected to stand in those lines. The Justice Department's taking legal action to be able to review documents marked as classified that the FBI took from former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The department is asking an appeals court to lift a federal judge's order preventing review of the documents temporarily. Mr. Trump has said he declassified those documents. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Marlins. Traffic and weather next. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges, I just checked out the traffic cameras. I didn't see any crashes, and I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, it's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. You're not tapping the brakes there. On 66 in Fairfax County, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. on 95 in Virginia between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. Lanes are at speed. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, hazy sunshine, highs in the low to mid-80s, 61 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:36, this is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the LondonCenter.org, and he is also the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, thank you. You know, the southwest border has come front and center in all of the mainstream media, finally, with the plane load of migrants that went to Martha's Vineyard, courtesy of Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, and two buses were unloaded in front of the Naval Observatory, Kamala Harris's residence, of course, here in Washington. A flurry of outcry from Democrats, from the mainstream media. And to help us to understand, unless you watch Fox News or listen to WMAL or other watch some of the other conservative news channels, there's no real attention to what's going on at the border until very recently with the migrants, you know, having been sent to New York, Chicago, and D.C., and now Martha's Vineyard. So help us understand the severity of the situation, which Democrats don't seem to understand or at least won't admit. And for somebody that's kind of middle of the road, doesn't follow the news too closely, how bad is it?
Well, let's just start with some stats that I think will help illustrate. The people that Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, flew to Martha's Vineyard, 50 people, that is literally 0.00001% of what's coming across the southwest border. A small percentage, but that whole region went nuts with 50 people. Imagine the scale we're talking. We're talking about literally waves of human beings coming across and not being stopped. So what that's done is even in Democrat districts, and this is the other thing too, to remind the audience that this is not a partisan issue. Democrat districts, Democrat towns are fed up with this along the border because they just don't have the resources to deal with it. So the federal government, as much as they're in charge, they pretend to not recognize the fact that they're not stopping this wave is actually harming a number of communities within a number of states. So that's what's going on. And these states become literally open sewers because there's so many people living outdoors without any resources otherwise. And I don't know how that's a good idea. And it does indeed put immigrants, migrants, illegal aliens, whatever you want to call them, into the position of being, you know, basically in horrible conditions that result in disease and death. Now, I find it laughable, and I've seen interviews of the people who actually were flown to Martha's Vineyard, and man, they're being treated well. They've been moved to an Air Force base on the mainland, Cape Cod, but Rick, they're being treated way better than other immigrants, migrants, illegal aliens, whatever you want to call them, coming across the border in southwest Texas and everything. So it's huge. And the fact that Joe Biden refuses to deal with it, Kamala Harris makes essentially light of it, indicates that this is their policy. This is something that could be fixed, should be fixed, and they're choosing not to do it. So this is not a left or right issue. This is a national security issue, which at this point, the Biden administration has knowingly and continues to promote this idea of an open border. And it's I think the most recent actions by governors have highlighted that to a larger public. And as far as I'm concerned, if they're moving these folks around and sending them to places like the cities which accept them, they say that, you know, we're an open city for illegal immigrants, then maybe it's better that they share the wealth and take some of the pressure off the southwest border.
I want to turn to Ukraine. Report this morning that Western defense officials and analysts are saying They believe Russian forces are setting up a new defensive line in the northeast after Ukraine troops broke through the previous one, tried to press their advances further into the east. We've heard reports this week that Ukrainian forces have been making progress and that even some of the Russian soldiers have just been running away. Now, you have been pessimistic over the past few weeks when it comes to the situation in Ukraine and can they right. push back the Russians? Can they defeat the Russians? And I haven't challenged you on it because I think I understand that you're doing a reality check in terms of where you see this from a military standpoint in the long run. But I do want to ask you to clarify, you know, we do hear these positive steps, but you're pessimistic.
Well, I am. Look, my job is to analyze, not promote. And the idea that somehow I'm going to take a side is beyond insane. At this point, Rick, looking at what I see every day, I get a report from my staff that gives me kind of the deeper issues. And even if you look at the recent reports, like this morning I was looking at Vox, the Europeans are now saying, gee, I don't know if we can produce enough material to really help the war effort because, geez, we're depleting our own stocks. The Russians have directly threatened Germany. Well, why would they do that? They did that because the Germans are completely dependent on the Russians for gas and energy. So simply because you have a military component succeeding, it doesn't mean because of other strategic issues are going to win. That's just the facts. And I'm sorry if people don't like the fact that my assessment is going to be looking at the deeper, more esoteric issues. But yes, it's great the Ukrainians have made the gains they have. They have found some places when they've taken terrain back, it looks like people were tortured. I'm all for them going to the world court and seeking redress of this. But, you know, I'm not going to compromise my integrity by trying to be a cheerleader for one side or the other. And at this point, it just indicates to me that Ukraine, yes, they're doing well. We've done a lot to help them, and God bless the folks who got the training and were effective. With that said, there are larger things afoot that indicate to me that the Europeans are only going to go so far. The United States is not going to send ground troops. And without additional troops, without additional support, I just don't see the Ukraine gains being sustainable. That's the bottom line.
Do these gains help in terms of a negotiated settlement at some point?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And this is one of the things I've said over and over. I was just watching something on last night late, right after we spoke, on Ron Brown and the efforts in Bosnia and Herzegovina to negotiate a settlement of that war. We were in the middle of that. Ron Brown died in the middle of that because, you know, obviously he was doing shuttle diplomacy. Rick, we're not doing that. We're not out there trying to resolve this. And that's what worries me. It's the first time in my lifetime that I've not seen the United States out in the middle trying to resolve this in a way that would benefit the world and not benefit one side or the other. And that's one of the things I'm worried about. We should not be taking sides. We should try to be working to resolve this and get things back on track so that the Europeans are happy, that people in our region are safe, and that the United States, especially the government, is working in the interest of the American people, not for some foreign power.
I want to turn to an op-ed that you've written recently, actually published
sure.
this week at dailyadvance.com. The headline on it, The Dangers of Revisionist History. Tell us the story.
So I live in Edenton, North Carolina, little town, beautiful place. People probably been here before. There's a Civil War statue, and on this statue in the middle of the town square, it says, to commemorate our fallen, our fallen, essentially, our dead, Civil War dead. It was built and created and paid for by the families of those who lost members of their family during the Civil War. And there's a great effort right now to obviously move it, to get it out. And I'm just looking at this from the perspective of history. We're not going to move the monuments and statues in Gettysburg. And I believe that having statues reminds people that the Civil War was fought, people sacrificed, and the Union won. For whatever it's worth, I think these things need to be a reminder of the fact that the Confederacy existed but was defeated. And the more that people try to revise history because of certain untidy tidbits that they don't like, the more that they react emotionally to it, the more there's danger of us forgetting how deadly that war was. And I don't think we have that luxury to be able to just delete part of history we don't like. And that's what I think the danger is here. That's why I say my editorial. And my belief is we need to leave these things up because they remind me, Rick, that we did, the United States, Union Army did free the slaves, and the Confederacy was defeated. And I just don't think we ought to give that luxury to the Democrats, who were the ones behind the Civil War on the Confederate side, that luxury of allowing them to delete part of their history.
And it's entitled The Dangers of Revisionist History, and you will find it at dailyadvance.com. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, quickly, what's on the podcast this weekend?
Well, we have a special one coming up. As you guys know, we are always trying to do things differently. We actually have a special one coming up with a bunch of folks from the Hollywood and the news world, Sherry Curry and Jenny Bellstar Mathias. Join us for Susan Olson of the Brady Bunch fame to talk about how we're creating a cultural insurgency to fight back against woke culture. So people will get a hoot out of it. It's the first of a series, and man, I these ladies are amazing. So people should tune in and listen to us talk about wokeism and culture wars and learn a lot about what needs to be done to fix it.
Great. And you'll find it at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much as always.
Great. Thank you.
You bet. 747, Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland is next, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On 395 northbound in Arlington, traffic is very slow between Boundary Channel Drive and the 14th Street Bridge. On the Beltway in Virginia, no delays on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Staying in Virginia, on 66, eastbound and westbound lanes, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are clear, no crashes or construction. 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are at speed, northbound and southbound. And in D.C., on 295 and 695, I don't have any reports of any delays in either direction. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The hazy sunshine continues on this Saturday. Temperatures, they'll gradually reach the low to mid-80s across the region. Still very comfortable with low humidity. Now, later on tonight, lows back into the 60s. For your Sunday, we'll add a touch of heat. Highs in the upper 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
61 degrees in the nation's capital. 7:48 Saturday morning update.
Monday, the latest on the legal wrangling over the Mar-a-Lago raid, plus the devastating humanitarian crisis in Martha's Vineyard. O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
7:50, this is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by KT McFarland. She was President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always honored to have you join us.
Honor and a pleasure for me, too, Rick.
Thank you. Well, President Biden had promised us unity, and the U.S. seems to be in a food fight between conservatives and progressives. And then we watch the United Kingdom, and we watch the people in their celebration of Queen Elizabeth II, and sort of a contrast. When you look at how things are going over there, I know they have their, you know, food fights in the parliament, but in general, the contrast between the U.S. and the U.K. and kind of what's behind that?
You know, I think that the whole Western world is changing. I think the Eastern world is changing, too. But in the Western world, if you look what's happening in Great Britain, people are stunned by this. I mean, nobody expected, certainly nobody in America expected, the outpouring of just love and devotion for the Queen, not only for herself and for her service, but what she stands for. I mean, history, values, integrity, hard work. Meanwhile, in America, you know, the woke, especially the woke youth, have taken over media, the academics, the teachers' unions, think tanks, our so-called elites. They're quickly jettisoning everything about America that we've all held dear for generations. And I think what's happening is a shift. It's like a paradigm shift. The British are lining up for hours, for days, to view the Queen's casket. Nobody's jumping the queue. Even the rich and the famous are standing in line. The superstar, David Beckham, who's like the greatest athlete in anybody's, you know, mind, he's a global icon. He waited for 13 hours. He was offered, jump the queue, come and look quickly. No, I'm standing here. I'm honoring the Queen. My grandfather would never have jumped the queue. I'm not going to jump the queue. And I think that what they're saying is there's something here worth saving. There's something worth honoring. There's something important here. They're not even sure what it is. And similarly, there's a rightward tilt in all the European elections right now. The leftist media says, well, these are all a bunch of neo-Nazis being elected in Italy, Sweden, et cetera. But no, they're for the most part leaders who want to return their countries to traditional values. In America, we've gone in a different direction, right? Everything's woke. And even the people who are saying, oh, the Queen, horrible Queen, she should die a miserable death because she represents horrible, you know, colonialism. I mean, you know, America is in a weird place right now. And I think that the tide has started turning against the radical left and their anti-American agenda. In part, it's driven by economics because it's just not working. I mean, we have a horrible economy, inflation. We're going to have massive inflation in food and in energy, all because of this radical leftist agenda. And I think it's dawning on the American people that not only is the economy a mess because of the far left agenda, but other things are a mess too. The education of our children, the way the country is sort of at each other's throats. I think the fall elections are going to bear this out. I don't listen to those pollsters. They're the same pollsters who are asking the same kind of questions in the same jurisdictions that totally missed the national mood in 2016. I think they're missing it again. And then in 2 months after the midterm elections, we'll be off to the races for the presidential elections. And no matter who the candidates are, the Republicans will be represented by traditional values, by Reagan, by Trump values, maybe without all the animosity towards Trump. The left will be the far progressive left, the Gavin Newsoms, the woke left, and let the American people decide.
As you look down the road, we see the education community, very progressive, curriculums, very progressive. The media, what I see online, the only conservative stories that are ever published online are typically from the Fox News channel. Everything else is from the mainstream. So you've got this ratio of the progressive slant of the news to the conservative, which is just an outrageous ratio. Where do you see things going in the future?
Well, I think people aren't, you know, who's watching any of these channels? You know, when you think, how many people are there in America? You know, there are 300 million plus, 350 million Americans. Who's watching this? I mean, like 500,000 people, maybe a million people are exposed to some of the far left agenda. That's just a drop in the bucket. But the American public has moved on. They're not getting their news from the traditional media sources anymore. They're getting their news from their lives. I mean, they're making their decisions about inflation every time they go to the grocery store, making their decisions about the culture wars every time their kids bring home homework. And because of the pandemic and so many children having to go to school at home with lockdown, a lot of the parents say, oh, my gosh, this is what my kids are learning? Why am I part of this? And so I think you're seeing, as always happens in America, as always happens in Britain and other parts, it's a grassroots rebellion. That's what democracy is all about. It's not the elites shoving down the throats of the American or the British people what they ought to believe. It's the people, the grassroots American people, who have an enormous amount of common sense, who said, this is enough. We want a big change.
Got about 2 minutes left. I wanted to ask you about the conference between Xi Jinping of China and Vladimir Putin this week, and Iran is talking about joining one of their councils. Where do you see that going?
Well, I think that, again, I think the American elections are going to happen just in time because the rest of the world, they're changing too. The East is, China feels that its time has come. I think they have a narrowing window of opportunity to remake the world in the image they want to make it. And then they're going full steam ahead with an alliance between Iran, Russia, other countries that they're hoping to bring into their orbit. And they plan to rewrite the rules of order. May feel that the post-war world, the way we've kept the peace in the last, you know, since the 1945, the way we've kept the peace is not the way they want to keep the peace. They want to keep world peace with them in charge, and they want to rewrite all the rules of the international order, whether it's trade, whether it's economics, whether it's the international organizations. And they're well on their way to doing it. And the thing I guess I'm excited about and scared about at the same time, I'm excited that I think the American people are going to make a big change. I think the American people are going to make a change like we made in 1980, where we rejected a far-left agenda and then came back to the Reagan agenda, the traditional American values, and fixed the economy and stood up to our adversaries and defeated our adversaries without firing a shot. At the same time, we have the rest of the world, or parts of the world, and very powerful parts of the world, are lining up against the United States. So this is a pivotal moment. And I would say to anybody under the age of 40, this is your time. Do not let this pass. Be active. Be out there. Don't just read about it. Don't just chit-chat about it at the bar and then do nothing about it. Because this is your moment. This is your 1776 moment. This is your greatest generation moment. And I do think that the American people are up to the challenge.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. As always, KT, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. 8 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis, and then Garden Sense right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.